From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. We do have a great show for you today. Later on, we're going to be playing Not My Job with Ice-T, the rapper and actor, famous for a lot of things. Recently, of course, his role last 10 years on Law & Order SVU. We are hoping, in addition to our quiz, to be able to pitch him on our idea for a TV show, Law & Order NPR, in which we solve crimes and then encourage the still traumatized but grateful victims to pledge at any level. Because that's when they're vulnerable. We got some questions for you, though, so give us a call. The number 1-888-924-8924. That's 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Craig Fairbrother from Pittsboro, North Carolina.
Hey, Craig, how are you?
Doing just fine, Peter.
I'm glad to hear it. Now, where's Pittsboro?
It's about 10 miles south of where you did your show about the local flora and fauna with highlights on the local weasel.
Wait a minute. I know what you mean. You're near Chapel Hill, where we did our show last year, and by the local weasel, I assume you mean Mr. John Edwards?
Yeah.
Right.
That's the guy.
Now, Pittsboro is about 10 miles south of Chapel Hill.
I see. I'm sure his doghouse is so large you can see it from there. Well, Craig, welcome to our show. Let me introduce you to our great panel this week. First, say hello to a humorist and the author most recently of Alphabet Juice, Mr. Roy Blunt, Jr.
Hi, Roy.
Hey, how you doing?
Next is the woman behind the advice column Ask Amy and author of the memoir The Mighty Queens of Freeville. I mean, Ms. Amy Dickinson.
Amy.
Hi.
And lastly, a comedian whose first CD, I Heart Jokes, is available now. Plus, she is performing at the Count Basie Theater in Red Bank, New Jersey on June 19th. Go see her, but listen to her now, Paula Poundstone.
Hi, Paula.
Hey.
Craig, you're going to start us off, of course, with a round of Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle has been preparing all week to recreate for you voices from the week's news. Your job, identify or explain two of them. Do that, you win our prize. Ready to play?
Ready.
All right. Here is your first quote.
The hearings are a vapid and hollow charade in which repetition of platitudes has replaced discussion of viewpoint.
That was somebody 15 years ago criticizing Supreme Court nomination hearings. Well, she's going to have to pretend to like them now. Who is it?
It's Elena Kagan.
It is Elena Kagan. Very well done. To summarize the coverage of President Obama's new Supreme Court nominee, she is a centrist, leftist, radical compromiser who everybody loves and nobody knows, an all-American, out-of-touch elitist, right-handed, southpaw, asexual, lesbian, heterosexual, whose personal life is a complete mystery. So we expect her to be both easily confirmed and burned as a witch. They'll do it at the same hearing, just to save time. Some say that in picking an Ivy League, even-tempered compromiser, Obama basically tried to nominate himself. This is true. People have said it. Is this his self-image? He looks in the mirror and sees a 5'3" Jewish lady? This would explain his otherwise mysterious Twitter handle, Booby.
It'll be balanced, because I think most of the Supreme Court bats left-handed. And I noticed from her pictures that she bats right-handed. So if the right-handed defendant comes before the court, she will be able to handle him. Or left-handed.
Well, you know, somebody dug up from the University of Chicago yearbook a picture of her playing softball. And everybody went nuts about this photograph. Major League Baseball asked some of their players to comment on her stance. And other people, like Pat Buchanan, bless his heart, said, well, obviously she's a lesbian because everybody knows that only lesbians play softball.
I just never realized that you could determine from a sport.
Oh, yeah.
Says the professional advice columnist.
Oh, sure.
Dear Amy, sure. My daughter wants to play softball. Should I be worried?
you should celebrate that.
Now, one criticism of Ms. Kagan is that she's the first nominee in years who is not already a judge. And that could be fine. I mean, there are other justices who weren't a judge, but there is a slippery slope. I mean, if you allow a non-judge, then someday you might allow a non-lawyer, and then maybe like political pundits, and then Obama's heavy-drinking but folksy uncle.
As long as he's not gay, he's in Lake Flint.
Exactly. And then finally, Associate Justice Wilson, a volleyball with a face painted on it.
Yeah, I think the volleyball thing's going to get him in trouble. You know what they say about people who play volleyball.
Yeah.
All right, here is your next quote.
We'll have to cope for 4 or 5 years with our flesh creeping, but still...
Craig, that was a member of the Liberal Democrat Party talking about the first coalition government since World War II. Where?
In Britain.
In Britain, and right. In fact, the United Kingdom, after days of uncertainty, the Conservatives and the Liberal Democrat Party put aside their many differences to form a coalition government. It was a tough negotiation, took place over a few days, but it was finally settled with Nick Clegg, the leader of the Liberal Democrats, agreeing to take the bottom bunk at 10 Downing Street. We wonder, though, why this guy Nick Clegg, I guess he was desperate, why he would accept the post of Deputy Prime Minister. It's such a sop. It's like David Cameron gives him a badge and says, "Hey, son, would you like to be my deputy?" Why, yes, sir, thanks. That'd be keen.
Nick Clegg.
So what does a deputy do?
I think he just waits around.
Is it like a sidekick, sort of?
Yeah.
No, okay. Actually, on Tuesday night this week, David Cameron let him be prime minister for 2 hours while he and Mrs. Cameron went out to see Iron Man 2. Here's your last quote. It's from a resident of Florida named Kenny Navarre, and he was speaking to an oil executive.
Would it be possible just to go out there and bomb the hell out of it?
So what does Mr. Navarre want to bomb the hell out of?
The spewing oil well in the Gulf of Mexico.
Exactly right, yes, the spewing oil well. Very good. The Deepwater Horizon well has now been pumping oil into the Gulf of Mexico for so long that the Gulf is now mostly oil. It's now the Gulf Station of Mexico. Houses in Mobile Bay, Alabama are being advertised as being oil front properties. The latest idea, and this is true, to fix the leaking well, which nobody seems to be able to fix, is to just basically go down there, mile down, well housing around it, stuff it with garbage. Quote, shredded up tires, golf balls, things like that, unquote. The idea is they're going to throw all the stuff into the Gulf that no one wants, like the couch in your porch,
right.
Jay Leno's monologues. Joe Lieberman.
But like...
Senator Lieberman's like, so do I have to stay down there a long time? Yes, you do, Joe.
But maybe it's one of those things that's just so crazy, it might work.
I think they've already gone through that.
I love the fact that the thing that didn't prevent the blowout is a thing, the technical term for which is the blowout preventer.
Right. That's what it's called.
They forgot to check the blowout preventer.
They had a label on it.
Right. Stands for BP, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Carl, how did Craig do in our quiz?
Well, Craig's the winner, Peter. He had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on his home answering machine.
Well done, sir. Congratulations, Craig.
Thank you.
Wow.
Been a long, hard winter, longest I remember. I held out the best I can. Ran out of rhymes, about lost my mind. What's worse, I think I lost my tan. That's enough sneezing, that's enough freezing, that's enough of this ice and snow. So before I flip, better take a trip to the Gulf of Mexico. I'm getting ready to go, oh, living high and playing low. I want to wash my soul in the Gulf of Mexico.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions from this week's news. Paula, the Democratic candidate for Alabama State Treasurer is continually referring to his Republican opponent as a young boozer. Yet the Republican candidate himself has not challenged this allegation. Why not?
He's too drunk.
What'd you say? No, that's not the answer.
A young boozer. His last name is Boozer?
His last name is Boozer, and his first name is?
Young.
Yes, his name is Young Boozer. That's his name.
Wow.
Young Boozer is running for the office of treasurer of the state of Alabama under the slogan, funny name, serious leadership. Young Boozer is the great-great-grandson of Young Boozer I, whose name was changed on Ellis Island from the original Lindsay Lohan. He is running, Mr. Boozer is, under the platform of fiscal conservatism, long-term investment, and I'll bet you $10 you can't remember the name of the other guy. Falling behind in the polls, the other guy, Democratic candidate Jeremy Scherer, has announced he is changing his name to Fun Boobs McCrappin.
My vote.
Right now it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Caitlin from Arlington, Virginia.
Hey, Caitlin, how are you?
Very good, and how are you?
I am all right. What's going on there in Arlington?
Oh, not much. Just waiting out the traffic.
Is that what you do in Arlington? Just sit there in traffic and wait to get somewhere?
I mean, only 8 hours a day.
That's not a problem. Well, welcome to the show, Caitlin. You're going to play the game in which you must tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Caitlin's topic?
Shush.
These are tough times for libraries, what with the e-readers and the video games and our brains turning to soft gray pudding. But some libraries are not going to go quietly. This week we read about a library that decided to do what it must do to stick around. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories of libraries fighting for survival. Choose the true story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
All right, first let's hear from Roy Blunt, Jr.
The job Holden Caulfield wanted was catcher in the rye, standing next to a cliff to keep kids playing in the grass from falling over. Isn't that sweet? The job I want is a new job, a job so far available only in England. The Norfolk County Council over there created this job, we learned this week, because the local library was plagued by school children running about screaming and shouting. The job, library bouncer. Oh, man, it might not look good on my resume, library bouncer, and it might not pay so well, but I could so get into it. This is a damn library! Is there no place in this land where a person can sit quietly and read? Get that shouting and screaming out of here, I would say on my bullhorn, and then I would tase them.
Bouncers to keep the children in line at a library in England. Next up, let's hear from Amy Dickinson.
The tiny Lincoln Library in Sioux Falls, Iowa, knew it was in trouble when its DVD rental collection routinely outperformed their book lending. And so staff members came up with a literary idea to try to draw the public back into the stacks. The plan was for librarians to pair a favorite book with its corresponding cocktail. Ideas included pairing Jane Austen with Old Fashions, Mai Tais with Michener, Bloody Marys with Dracula, and of course, the novel Deliverance would go along with Boone's Farm. Last month's kickoff event got off to a raucous start with Hemingway's A Movable Feast. To honor the author's hard-drinking habits, they paired the book with shots of absinthe. Library patrons went a little crazy. Some merely got drunk, but others started hallucinating and running amok. Librarian Clara Gallagher looked on in horror. They went after the card catalog. It was like that scene in Ghostbusters with cards flying everywhere. Other people were making out over there in reference. There were a couple of fistfights in the children's corner. The librarians got the mess cleaned up and put back together just in time for next month's event, Ken Kesey's Moonshine Night. Mm.
Literary-themed cocktail nights.
I like that one.
At a library in Sioux Falls. That does sound like fun. Your last story of a library trying to change for the times comes from Paula Poundstone.
To avoid losing their librarians during these difficult economic times and budget cuts, in Homestead, Pennsylvania, library lovers have provided free room and board to their beloved librarians. The campaign titled Save a Librarian, We Saved Wales, We Can Do This, has so far been quite a hit, says librarian host Chris McCraw. We were nervous at first to save a librarian. We weren't sure what they would eat. I mean, they're so well-informed. If you're well-informed, there's nothing you can eat, really. And we were a bit ashamed that our books weren't well-organized. No, they were, honey, interrupts his wife, Renee. They just weren't alphabetized. I did them by size. The librarian we kept was wonderful, crows librarian host Susan Suamu. A bit messy in the kitchen, but reading time was awesome. She had my preschooler reading well beyond her age level. Within weeks, she went from Hop on Pop to Portnoy's Complaint.
Librarians move in with happy patrons. Let's review your choices from okay. Roy Blunt Jr., the story of a library bouncer, somebody hired to keep those unruly children in line. From Amy, cocktail evenings themed with books get a little out of hand. And from Paula Poundstone, to save the librarians, people take them into their homes where their books get organized and their children get read to. Which of these is the real story of libraries trying to make it after all?
I'm very tempted to go with number two, the books with the cocktails.
Right.
But. Okay, I'm leaning towards story number one.
You're leaning toward
Librarian
Roy's story.
Librarian bouncer.
Or is that the one you're going to choose?
That's my final answer.
That's your final answer. All right, you've chosen Roy's story of the bouncer librarian. Well, we spoke to an expert about libraries to bring you the right answer.
I think it makes perfect sense to have bouncers in the libraries. The majority of kids are great, but a few bad apples can ruin everybody's experience, and they ought to be taught.
That was Sally Reed. She's division director at the American Library Association. Congratulations, Caitlin. You got it right. You earned a point for Roy Blunt Jr. You've won our prize. Carl Castle will record your outgoing voicemail, answering machine message, whatever you like. Well done.
Awesome. Thank you.
It's great. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And now the game where we ask multi-talented people to do something that utilizes none of their talents. It's called Not My Job. Our guest has made a name for himself in rap, in metal, in breakdance movies, in video games, and, of course, for the last 10 years or so on Law & Order SVU. We're not talking, of course, about Richard Belzer. We're talking about Ice-T. Ice-T, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Oh, what's happening, everybody?
We got to ask, you've done so many things in your career for so long. Do you ever find that people, like, don't know that you've done other things?
I mean, absolutely.
People know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, right now, I've been on Law & Order 10 years. So, if, like, you talk to an 18-year-old kid, he was 8 years old when I started on Law & Order. So, a lot of them don't have any, you know, connection to my music career or any of the, you know, madness we did back in the 80s and 90s. So, you know, it's cool.
Are they shocked when you tell them?
Their mothers usually tell them.
Really?
Or either, you know what else, I meet like that grandma or somebody in an airport, and the grandmother loves me from SVU, and she's like, ooh, that's Ice-T. And their daughter's like, do you really know who that is? You know? So they got it. They always say, he's the police. They go, mama, he's far from a cop.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the madness. What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, you know, I mean, we started hardcore hip-hop back, you know, I started rapping in 1982. You know, it scared the hell out of America. I mean, we went on to do a lot of different other things that really shook up America. I mean, how many people in your audience will ever have the honor of having the President of the United States say their name in anger?
Can you imagine, like, back in 1986 when, like you say, you were being condemned by everybody, including the president, of, like, looking in the camera and saying, someday, America, I'm going to star in your favorite primetime drama.
It's only in America, baby.
I know, man.
Right, right. Little hand for America.
Let's go back to the beginning. Let's talk about the beginning of your musical career. You grew up in Southern California. Where did you start performing? How did you get into that?
I went to Crenshaw High School. After that, I went in the Army. I did 4 years in the military. And when I came out of the military, I got it right into trouble.
Yeah.
You know, I was out in the streets doing everything. I mean, I robbed banks. I did all kinds of things. And, you know, the music business, the rap music business was just starting. And I would go to clubs, and after I would go out and do whatever I was doing, I would go into clubs, and I would rhyme just to get attention. And I started to kind of mix in some of the facts of the life that I was living with the music, and we created a genre, which they call gangster rap.
I'm sorry, I mean, maybe it's just me, but I'm just kind of amazed at the idea. Well, I was robbing banks, and that didn't get me enough attention, so I decided to make up rhymes. And it worked, you know.
Well, you don't want to, I got news for you. You don't want to get attention when you're
Yeah, I guess not. You want to sneak around. I'm sorry, this is why I'd be really bad at living your life, I guess.
Nah.
You don't want to do that.
It's amazing, though.
I mean, you were a bank robber. You were living that life. Now you're a television star. You're about to direct your first movie. Would you suggest that to young kids instead of, saying, going to drama school? Go rob a bank or two. Get some life experience.
Nah. I mean, I would say, you know, what they think is square is the correct way. You know, go to school, get an education, graduate, you know, get a degree. I mean, those things that, you know, lots of cats like myself try to do, those are what we thought were considered shortcuts.
Right.
But you usually make a detour through the penitentiary, and then you come out, you know, 20 years later, now your shortcut is turning to the longest route you ever thought.
I want to talk to you about your acting career. One of the things that everybody's noticed is you got Ludacris, you got Mos Def, you got Common, you got Andre Benjamin. All you guys are doing really well as actors in movies and TV. You compare it to, let's just say, Britney Spears in the movie Crossroads.
Mm-hmm.
It seems as if you guys...
No, let's not compare.
No, compare you favorably, because you guys are really good actors. Is there something about hip-hop that lends itself to acting?
I think to act, you have to be real. You have to be willing to zero yourself out and become the character. And I think, you know, also you're dealing with cats that come from a background with no opportunity. So when you give us an opportunity, we really apply ourselves.
Now, you're working on a documentary about hip-hop, about rap music?
Yeah, my first film that I'm ever going to direct is called The Art of Rap. I'm going into the inside of the rapper's head and let people know how we actually do it. It's not about the cars, it's not about the girls, it's not about the lifestyle. It's about the actual craft of how rappers do it.
Do you think that, I mean, I don't know if you've ever done this before, but have you ever considered having an ice rap summit? You, Ice Cube, Vanilla Ice.
Yeah, Vanilla Ice. He's a funny guy.
Do you know Vanilla Ice?
Yeah, I met Vanilla Ice. I met Vanilla Ice later on in his career, once now that he doesn't want to be called Vanilla Ice. And he was actually a really cool dude.
Right.
You know? So I think back in the day, we didn't really dig it because...
No.
One of his mistakes was he came into the rap business saying he was from the street. And we were like, what street? Sesame Street? You know? But that was a mistake. He didn't have to say that. All he had to do was say, hey, I'm a white kid. I'm trying to rap, and I want to be accepted. You don't have to lie and say you're from someplace you're not, you know?
Well, wait a minute. When you say the street... Everybody's from A Street.
Everybody's from A Street, but when you say the street, that means you probably had to live off of being in the street. You might have had to survive on the street.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up on a street called Cinnamon Tree Lane. I don't think that gets me. True fact. I don't think, next to Vanilla Ice, in fact. He was my neighbor. He was very nice at the time.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
I don't think I'm going to try to get any rap cred based on that.
Ice-T, Peter Sagal totally has the look.
In what way do I have the look?
You got that look. You got the bling, the girls, the cars.
Oh, yeah.
If he got the bling, the girls, and the cars, he don't need to make music then.
That's true. I'm skipping the middle part. Ice-T, we're delighted to have you with us. We've invited you here to play a game we're calling...
Pimps Up, Pantyhose Down.
Sounds good.
I'm sorry. I just have to take a moment to get over the fact we made Carl say that. And, all right, we're going to go on, though. You, of course, you appeared in the documentary Pimps Up, Hose Down. We thought we'd ask you about another kind of hose, pantyhose.
Oh, Lord.
Well, I know. Answer 2 out of 3 questions correctly. You'll win our prize for one of our listeners. Carl's voice and their home answering machine or voicemail. Carl, who is Ice-T playing for?
Ice is playing for Captain John Frederick from Lakenheath, England.
My gosh.
Hey, can I apologize to the captain now?
Go right ahead. All right, here we go. This is your first question. Alan Gant Sr. was inspired by his wife to invent a garment which attached stockings to underwear, but he didn't originally call it pantyhose. The first commercial pair went on sale in 1959 and was called what? A, Gant's Miraculous and Amazing Toning Textile. B, Panty Legs. Or C, Footed Britches.
Where is this guy from?
I don't know. Probably not the street would be my bet.
What's his name?
His name was Alan Gant Sr., the inventor of what we now know as pantyhose. But he called it either, when he invented it, Gant's Miraculous and Amazing Toning Textile, Panty Legs, or Footed Britches.
I'll say Footed Britches.
Footed Britches sounds good. It does. I'd buy them.
Mm.
But there were panty legs. Panty legs is what they were called. All right, two more chances. Here we go. Pantyhose, it turns out, are not just for wearing anymore. In fact, according to the blog Lifehacker, people are using them how? A, to build massive slingshots for monthly panty fights. B, to stuff with crepe paper, tying them on, and attending four-legged parties. Or C, to keep their onions fresh.
Is that a euphemism?
No, it is not a euphemism.
How about the onion one?
How about the onion one? You're right, sir. The onions. Very good. Put them in pantyhose, you hang them up, they stay fresh.
What the hell is a four-legged party? What the hell?
Oh, man. You talk about the madness in my youth. That's what we're talking about. All right, this is great. You got one right with one to go. You get this right, you win it all for the good captain. According to MSNBC, anyway, more and more men are wearing pantyhose. On men, though, they're most commonly called what? A, mantyhose.
What?
B, smoothers. Or C, boxer hose. Mantyhose, smoothers, or boxer hose?
Why would a man wear pantyhose?
Don't ask me. Ask MSNBC. Just for that smooth feeling.
Just in case you get your knickers in a twist.
Yeah. Exactly.
Or to hide his onions.
Okay, what's the last one?
The last one is... Here we go. I'm going to give them all your choices. Was it A, are they called A, mantyhose, B, smoothers, or C, boxer hose?
That's so stupid. I'll say mantyhose.
Mantyhose? I don't know what this is going to do for your cred, man, but you're right. It's called mantyhose. Carl, how did Ice-T do in our quiz?
He had two correct answers, Peter, so Ice wins it for Captain John Frederick.
Yeah.
Yes, you won, baby. You're right. You can be successful in anything you do. I think you're a lesson for today's youth.
Hey, Ray, I like winning. I hate losing, so that was good for me. I feel good.
That's good. Ice-T is a rapper and an actor. He stars in Law & Order SVU. Ice-T, thank you so much for being with us today. Great pleasure to talk to you. Woohoo, man. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Take care.
My pants are sagging, braided hair. Suckers stare, but I don't care. My game ain't knowledge, my game's fear. I've no remorse, so squares beware. But my true mission.
Thanks, everybody. In just a minute, Carl listens back to Ice-T's first album, Rhyme Pays, in our Listener Limerick Challenge.
No.
That's not really a joke. His first album was really called Rhyme Pays. Anyway, if you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. But right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Paula, having tackled health care, the U.S. Congress is now focused on other kinds of reform. Among them, reform in the financial industry, environmental regulations. And this week, they held hearings to reform what?
I don't know. I thought they had offshore drilling.
They're too busy for that with this. They're actually trying to guarantee equality in something. They want to make sure that both men and women have an equal right to what?
Oh, I can't imagine. Are they secret hearings?
No. These were public, as what they were the things that they were talking about are public as well, although...
I know, the bathrooms in the Congress.
Exactly.
There's not enough
it was a hearing about restrooms. Exactly,
yeah.
Right. The Restroom Gender Parity in Federal Buildings Act, also known as the Potty Parity Law, will require federal buildings to make sure there are enough facilities for the ladies, avoiding those long lines you see at ladies' rooms and sports stadiums and such.
Yes.
Also, and this is great, federal buildings will start selling beer until the seventh inning. So that's good.
Well, you know what happens to a lot of women is that we then don't drink beverages when we're out and we dehydrate.
Is that true? Is that a problem?
Yes, that's a problem.
You also don't run down on the field naked.
We need to talk to you, woman, about that. We want more drinking and more running on the field.
When we run down on the field naked, unfortunately, we've nothing to blame but ourselves.
Because you haven't been drinking.
Precisely.
Okay, yeah, well.
The problem is that this law, it'll apply to new construction and they'll have to be retrofitted, so it won't come into effect for a while. So it's a stopgap measure.
We can wait. Right.
You've been waiting for so long.
Just cross your legs.
We got the muscles.
How long?
This is true. This is the best exchange of the hearing. And this is quite real. Representative Steve Cohen, he was trying to express sympathy for the ladies. He said, quote, "When you go in and you're a man, you don't have to take off any clothing, and it can be done, and you're in and you're out, and you don't do lipstick." And Daryl Issa, who was a Republican of San Diego, responded, quote, "Well, you're not a Californian."
There are several senators and congressmen at least there's one other one that springs to mind. What was his name?
Which one?
The guy in the Minnesota.
Craig.
What was his name?
Craig.
Larry Craig.
Larry Craig.
Yeah. He didn't put on lipstick. He had a wide stance.
But restrooms were a passionate interest of his.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right. Yeah. Well, allegedly. allegedly.
Is he still there in the Congress?
No. What happened was is he did not run for re-election and has retired to private restrooms.
Something.
Go ahead, Paul.
Because I don't know anything about this. What sport does he play?
Roy, the singing of the call to prayer is a staple of life in the Muslim world, but in Turkey, officials were finally forced to intervene after a problem with these calls to prayer. What was the problem?
I don't want a fatwa on my head, so I'm not going to say.
You're just going to remain silent.
I'll go ahead. What the hell? I don't know.
It's like the name of a country western song.
What the hell? I don't know.
No,
what
I
the
don't
hell?
Want a fatwa on my head.
No, I don't want a fatwa on my head. Lord. I don't want a fatwa on my head.
I don't want a fatwa.
By the way, our big old
but
cow.
But this is going to get you one. So the question is, if you've ever been in a Middle Eastern country,
they have minarets.
Minarets, and people call them muezzins is their name, and they sing the call to prayer, I think, five times a day, if I'm not mistaken. But there's been a growing problem with this in Turkey, and the government finally decided to intervene because people simply couldn't stand it. What was the problem?
The muezzins are all out of key.
Exactly right.
Really?
They can't sing.
They can't sing.
Oh, man, are you going to get a fatwa on your head?
I didn't mean it. I was just saying something that I knew couldn't possibly be true because some of my best friends are muezzins.
It was clear that one of two things was going on in Istanbul recently. Either the morning call to prayer was being led by a stray cat in heat, or the muezzins who sang it were tone deaf. The city's mosques were receiving hundreds of complaints every month. Istanbul's head of religious affairs finally enrolled the worst offenders in singing classes and now can happily report they're just down to dozens of complaints a month. They credit the good result to voice coaches Mullah Simon Cowell, Imam Rendi Al Jackson, and of course, Paula Abdul Abdul. Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. You can also check out our blog, which our commenters have called Sophomoric, a threat to NPR's integrity and a reason to review our intern hiring process. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hey, Peter, how are you?
I'm fine. Who's this?
This is David Lundy from Dallas, Georgia.
Dallas, Georgia.
Yes.
Different from the other Dallas. What do you do there?
I am a computer programmer.
I see. Okay. And that's exciting and interesting work?
Well, it depends on who you talk to, but yeah.
Well, I'm talking to you. Is it exciting and interesting work?
I am absolutely wrapped on a daily basis, yeah.
I understand. Okay. Well, welcome to our show, David. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each of them. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, on two of the limericks will be a winner. Ready to go?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Here is your first limerick.
As mother, the kid's name is My Right. And Cullen sounds great, dear, so why fight? The vampire novellas have Jacob and Bella. Let's name kids for figures from
Twilight.
Exactly right. Last year's kindergartners were all named Harry and Hermione. Next year, they'll be named for angsty vampires. According to the Social Security Administration's annual list of most popular baby names, parents are naming their kids after the characters in Twilight. Isabella and Jacob are topping the list, and Cullen, that's the last name of the lead vampire, jumped 300 spots in the last couple of years. We're just imagining a couple years from now these kids picking sides for kickball. Kids are like, I'll take Cullen, Count Chocula, and Nosferatu. No, no, not you. I meant Nosferatu Goldstein.
This is not new at all. I mean,
no.
It's new because it's Twilight, but my uncle Huckleberry.
I didn't fall for that. I went for the classic names. I have my daughter's C-3PO. Yoda. And Kirk. All right. Here is your next limerick.
They pop right out. They do not stay coy. Girls jump off the page and display joy. Our mag is not drab, but ready to grab. It's 3D for pictures in
Playboy.
Right, exactly. Playboy is the answer. Making boobs appear more realistic has never been the goal at Playboy magazine, but Hugh Hefner has spotted a trend in Hollywood, and he is going to get on board. When asked about his plan for a 3D centerfold, he said, quote, what would people most like to see in 3D? Probably a naked lady, unquote. Of course, probably a naked lady is Hef's answer to pretty much every question. At Boston Market, Mr. Hefner, would you like any sides? Probably a naked lady. Sir, has anyone else handled your baggage? You know. All right, here is your last limerick.
My marriage once on a firm base shook, 'cause I said my ex has a new place. Look, I got social online, now I'm not doing fine. I'm divorced 'cause I spent time on
Facebook.
Right. According to legal experts, one in five divorce petitions these days cite Facebook as a cause.
Wow.
This is true. One in five. They claim the social networking site acts as a springboard for licentious behavior, enabling husbands and wives to reconnect with past lovers who, after a few years of marriage, suddenly seem a lot less crazy. It doesn't really even have to be somebody you dated. It's late at night, you're cruising Facebook, and you start thinking, hey, it's Bobby from kindergarten. Wonder if he still eats paste. Carl, how did David do in our quiz?
Very well, Peter. Three correct answers. So, David, you win our prize.
Well done. Congratulations.
Woo-hoo.
Thanks so much for playing.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill in the blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Paula Poundstone and Roy Blunt Jr. are tied for first, Peter. Each has 3 points. Amy Dickinson has 2.
All right. Amy, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Here we go. After talks at the White House on Wednesday, President Obama held a joint press conference with blank.
Hamid Karzai.
Right. A 9-year-old Dutch boy was the sole survivor of Wednesday's plane crash in blank.
Libya.
Right. At an event on Tuesday, Michelle Obama rolled out the White House plan featuring 70 ideas to end child blank.
Obesity.
Right. This week, the Los Angeles City Council approved a boycott of blank unless its new immigration policy is repealed.
Arizona.
Right. California Democratic Party Chairman John Burton issued a statement denying he had said bleep you to a reporter. In fact, he had said blank.
Bleepity blank you.
No, he said go bleep yourself. On Wednesday, it was reported that photos of a second prototype of the blank had been posted online.
The new iPhone?
Right, because of a neck injury, Blank dropped out of the Players' Championship last weekend.
Tiger Woods?
Right, and by neck injury, we mean an injury to his neck. A fugitive who was found and arrested by police in Cancun, Mexico, after he blanked, pled guilty this week to fraud charges.
He was arrested, charged for fraud. His trousers.
He was arrested in Cancun after he updated his Facebook status.
Oh,
what's the fun of stealing $200,000 if you can't brag about it to your friends?
Wow.
Police easily found Maxi Sopo in Cancun by following his status updates. Things got any easier. This is true after Mr. Sopo friended a former Justice Department official. Carl, how did Amy do in our quiz?
6 correct answers, Peter, for 12 more points. Amy now has 14 points and the lead.
Well done, Amy. Congratulations. We have flipped a coin. Roy has elected to go next. Here we go, fill in the blank. Executives from BP, Halliburton, and Transocean appeared before Congress this week, each blaming the others for the recent blank.
Oil spill.
Right. At a town meeting in Buffalo, New York, President Obama talked about his plan to create blank.
Create a jobs bill.
Right. The Thai general who broke ranks to aid protesters known as the blanks was shot by a sniper on Thursday.
Oh, the protesters known as the blanks. I don't know what the protesters are called. Let's say they're called the Taiwan owns.
No, they're called the red shirts. Drug dealers and farmers in Afghanistan were hit hard this week when an unknown disease began wiping out fields of blank.
Opium.
Right, or poppies, yes. Poppy. A Chinese judo champion who failed a drug test blamed her positive test on blank.
On her opponent who had smeared, had wrestling.
She blamed it on too many pork chops.
Oh.
After undergoing surgery to replace a heart valve, host of The View Blank thanked fans for their good wishes.
Barbara Walters.
Right. To correct a glitch, this week's engineers at Blank temporarily deleted all of their users' followers.
MySpace.
No, Twitter. A teacher in Germany is suing one of her students for the trauma she suffered when the student terrorized her with Blank.
Terrorized her with a saying, no more teachers, no more room. little rhyme.
No,
little
no.
Mean
terrorized
rhyme.
Her by drawing a picture of a bunny on the chalkboard.
Oh.
You see, this teacher had a phobia of rabbits.
Wow.
Instead of doing something even more sinister, like reading Watership Down over the loudspeaker or scattering a pile of raisinettes under her chair, the student played it straight and drew a little bunny on the blackboard. The student explained, we wanted to see if she would really freak out. Turns out the teacher did, but not nearly as badly as she did later when she met her attorney, Harvey. Carl, how did Roy do in our quiz?
Roy had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. He now has 11, but Amy still has the lead with 14 points.
All right, then.
No, wait.
How many does Paula need to win?
6 correct answers.
6.
Let me just say, this kid must have been a heck of an artist.
To create a bunny frightening enough.
Right, to make enough bunny looking.
All right, here we go.
Yeah, so, I'm ready.
6. You need 6 to win.
I got
to
get 6.
Here we go.
I'm on
this
it.
Is for the game. Fill the blank. The FBI searched several homes in the Northeast this week as part of their investigation into the attempted bombing at blank.
Times Square.
Right. After being hospitalized with a mild stroke, the son of blank was reported to be alert and communicating.
Biden.
Right. The Red Cross launched relief efforts in Oklahoma after this week's deadly blanks.
Tornadoes.
Right. Acting and singing legend Blank died last Sunday night at the age of 92.
Lena Horne.
Right. During a restaurant stop in Buffalo, New York on Thursday, a customer greeted President Obama saying Blank.
Hi.
No. She said to the president, you're a hottie with a smoking little body. That's what she said. At age 88, Betty White became the oldest person ever to host blank.
Saturday Night Live.
Right. Sweden's royal court has made a desperate plea to the nation's armed forces to supply the palace guards with blank.
Guns.
No, pants. As part of their preparations for Crown Princess Victoria's upcoming wedding, the royal court ordered appropriate uniforms for its guards, but the uniform pants did not arrive. Even more guards are arriving in May, but the pants are not expected to arrive until August. So the court has sent a desperate letter to the armed forces asking to please, for the love of everything holy, send them some pants. Carl, did Paula do well enough to win?
She needed 6 correct answers to win, Peter, but Paula had just 5 correct
answers. Oh, so close.
With 14 points, Amy Dickinson is this week's
champion. Well done.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Nice. Hey.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists what big surprise will come out of Elena Kagan's confirmation hearings. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations. And to the National Association of Realtors, providing information for those buying or selling their homes at houselogic.com/buy and sell. Lindemood Bell Learning Centers, offering summer instruction to help students read and comprehend to their potential, 800-300-1818. And to The Economist, covering news and ideas from around the world and the connections between them. The Economist, on newsstands, in bookstores, and at economist.com. Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dolarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Today, we say goodbye to our intern, Christine Fielder, who is moving on to bigger and better things, which, if you know our show, you realize includes almost anything. Christine, we wish you the best of luck. Now, panel, what will shock us from Elena Kagan's confirmation hearing? Roy Blunt, Jr.
She's perfectly qualified in every respect, except it's really kind of sad. She gets a terrible rash and breaks out in uncontrollable sneezing whenever she puts on a black robe.
Amy Dickinson.
Oh, Elena Kagan. She's had more husbands than Elizabeth Taylor, and she's secretly engaged to Larry King.
And Paula Poundstone.
There are photographs, and they can't be certain that this is what was happening, but apparently in preschool she played Duck Duck Goose.
Well, if any of that happens, panels, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carol Castle. Thanks also to Paula Poundstone, Roy Blunt Jr., Amy Dickinson. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR.